It was a big decision to make. She promised him an answer, but when? Hostilities had ceased, and Dan was standing on a street corner in Rotterdam, keeping a wary eye out for any of the snipers who might not have heard that Holland had just surrendered to the Allies. It had been a dirty crawl across Europe for the past 8 months or so. Who was this Hitler guy anyway? And why would he want to do what he did here? What a mess. Where was that? It was not close. A few blocks over. Billy was over in that sector. Hunting ducks on the Surrey River had been an asset to survive on this place. However, another survival was on Dan's mind at the moment. The first time he saw Jenny was on the side of the road begging for food. She looked a lot older than him. She was laughing and cheering the Canadian troops as they advanced deeper into Holland. She was surrounded by children, and the sheer beauty of her through all the dirt and grime did not leave his thoughts. She appeared at the edge of the camp area late that night, and he gave her what food he could. She did not eat a thing, but left in a hurry. Early the next morning, she was back for more. Each time, she looked Dan square in the eye and said thank you in broken English. Dan's unit stayed in the sector for 2 weeks, while the rest of the battalion pressed on. He could see a difference in Jenny each day as she came for the food. Her father had been a member of the resistance, had been caught, and was not seen since. Her mother's body had been found earlier in the canal, a victim, it would seem, of an air raid, but that too was suspicious. Jenny was scrambling each day to feed herself and 5 brothers and sisters. She was only 18, but looked to be 100. About 10 days later, she came at a regular time in the evening, and Dan almost didn't know her. She had bathed, washed her hair, and had a new dress on. She told him that she did it for him. High compliment, what she appeared to be offering, but Dan wasn't about to let that happen. He needed no payment for feeding them. She seemed relieved. They just sat and talked, night after night, until his unit had to advance. Leave saw him more than once going back to the small village, and he was soon welcomed by the whole batch of them. He put a lot of thought into this. There were no more complications back home. Betty said she would wait, but she didn't, and married one of the pocket boys in Surrey. He was disappointed when he first heard, but now he was almost relieved. Late one night, they sat in what was left of Jenny's house, and he told her of his home back in Canada. He had part of his father's small farm, about 100 acres, most of it was woods, up in back of the chapel. He would build a new house. Then he told her about being an islander, how you had to be one by being born there, even conceived there. She would have a label, CFA, come from away. How important religion seemed to be, for if he and Jenny married, how it would looked upon as a mixed marriage. How, because of her accent, she might be shunned a bit. How, when her story came out, and all stories come out in PEI, she might be pitied and felt sorry for. How, when there was an election on, she might for a month or so be ignored and treated miserably by their neighbors, because he was a Grit and they were Tories. He told her about how much shale and rock was on the land, and that it would be slave labor to get it cleared. Then he made the offer. He would try to get permission to marry her and bring her and her family to Prince Edward Island so that they could all start over. He did tell her about the old-fashioned Scots and Irish that he had for parents and how they might not accept her right away, being that she was different. He told her all the good things, too. He thought he lived in a really great place, and he told her that he loved her, and he did not want to be alone anymore. Not the greatest of proposals, but she better know about what she was letting herself in for. Jenny sat quietly, and many minutes later said she would think about it. And then she asked him to leave.
Ugh! Sharp pain in his thigh. Dan sat down carefully on the street. He put his hand down. Red liquid. Blood. He had been hit. Dan passed out.
He awoke much later with a doctor looking at him through the haze.
Your lucky day, Sergeant. You will walk again, but with a limp. It blew out a lot of muscle, and you are being sent back to England immediately. I'm giving you a shot here to let you sleep, to make the trip more comfortable. Your war is over.
Dan's mouth was so dry, he could not speak. Jenny was his last thought. The next 3 weeks were torture, pain, a raging infection, and no way to get a message to Jenny. He did not even know how to spell her last name. The return to Canada was bittersweet. He never mentioned Jenny to anyone but thought of her every day. She had to have found someone else. He couldn't blame her. He wrote about a dozen letters, but there was no reply. It was 10 years on. The day of the reading of his father's will, he decided that enough was enough. He could use the cash for a tractor, but a trip to Holland to find her would really let him know what to do with the rest of his life. He was 33. He had to see her one more time, husband or no husband. Closure, they called it. The crossing to Southampton from Halifax was a lot smoother than it was in 1940, and a lot more comfortable. He exercised on the deck. He still needed the cane, but there was no more pain, just stiffness. Dover to Bruges was a different trip. The channel was not nearly as crowded as it was in June 1944. This time, there were trains running on the mainland. It took several days to get his courage up, but he finally took the local train out to the little town. The house was gone. There was a factory there now. Dan looked around carefully, looking at faces. But they were gone. Somewhere. Memories took over, and by dusk, Dan found himself by the canal. He sat in the old familiar spot and could not control his tears. He sensed someone sitting down beside him and heard a voice of broken English. "There you are, Dan. You were a little late, don't you think?" "I finally made up my mind, Dan. Yes, I will marry you and come to Canada with you." It had to be a dream. Then he looked down to see a delicate hand put a small bundle of envelopes, wrapped in yarn, on his lap. She said quietly, "I hope they will teach our children in your Canadian schools how to put return addresses on envelopes."